Oh, another thing for us to all get, a little bit concerned about and maybe a little bit afraid. And then there's crime. Crime seems to be totally out of control. Now, I get to see a little bit more of that because of where I work. I work at Raymond Hall, which is the Pierce County Juvenile Detention Center. I get to see things that never hit the paper. And I get to see what the courts are doing about it. And it could be scary to see what is going on and sometimes what's not being done about it or what's not even being told to the public is going on. It's a scary thing out there. Of course, then there's the one thing that we have all dealt with for the last 2 years of the pandemic. It's been a terrible, terrible thing. And now that it seems to be subsiding a little bit, the things I hear at work is there going to be a resurgence? Is there going to be another setback? Or when is the next one going to hit? And it's like there's all this to be afraid of. And then there seems to be the attack on the church throughout the world. Not only attack on the church, but it seems that the moral fiber of our country is just kind of falling apart. And we get terrified. And we get scared. And there's all this, it's just how bad can it get? Things like this have been going on for a long time. In fact, ever since the world came about, the stuff's been going on. In fact, Jesus, in Matthew 24, talks about the things that are going on. In fact, in Don Hutchins' Sunday school class in the morning, he's talking about some of this stuff. And some of it says, "For nations will rise against nations and kingdoms against kingdoms, and there will be famines and pestilence and earthquakes in various places, and all these are the beginning of sorrows. Then they will deliver you up to tribulation and kill you, and you will be hated by all the nations for my name's sake." Wow. You mean this is just the beginning of it? And we can get wrapped up in how bad things are right now. Phil has made a couple times I've heard him say, as bad as things are right now, it's been worse. It's been a lot worse. The persecution of the church for the first 200 years, thousands upon thousands of martyrs that were killed. But that hasn't stopped. We don't hear about it as much, but the martyrs of the church have not stopped. In 2020, depending on what one you listen to, but the one that I found that was most accurate, in 2020, there were about 4,300 martyrs for Jesus Christ. These aren't people that were randomly killed. These are people that actually died for their faith. 4,300 people in 2020. In 2021, it rose to about 4,800. They're saying by the end of this year, it'll possibly be closer to 6,000. And this isn't like the wars that are happening where Christians are involved and Christians are being killed in wars. This is people that are actually being killed because of their faith. It's still happening. But it's been going on for thousands of years. Then you have, wars. World War I, World War II. I mean, there's always been wars, but we've had these great big wars. Do you know that the year that World War I ended was the same year that the Spanish flu broke out? Can you imagine how those people felt? You just ended World War I, the first time we had a worldwide war, and the Spanish flu broke out. The Spanish flu, let me check my numbers here, the Spanish flu killed somewhere somewhere in the area of 50 million people. To give you an idea, the pandemic that we just came out of, depending on the figures you want to hear, the official figure is about 6 million people. Okay? Now, depending on who you listen to, it could be half of that because of people that they're counting that may not have died, or it could be three times that. So anywhere from 3 to 18 million people. The Spanish flu killed 50 million. Thing is when the Spanish flu broke out, the world population was a quarter of what it is now, 2 billion people. And it was 50 million people. But we can go back further than that. There's the bubonic plague in the 14th century. 14th century, the world population was about 450 million people. That's the world population. 450 million. And the bubonic plague killed anywhere from 50 to 200 million people. Almost 40% of Europe was wiped out. Interesting about that. It took them over 200 years to recuperate society after the bubonic plague. Because of the bubonic plague, good and bad come out of that. One of the things is people lost the sense of it's all about now. It was no longer all about now. It was all about eternity. They got to the point that death was so common that it isn't about what's happening to me right now. It's about what's happening to me after death. And so for 200 years, it became this thing about it's all about what happened after death, which is good and bad. Because the church at that time decided to take advantage of that. How they took advantage of it is they decided, if you want to go to heaven, we will sell you an indulgence. In other words, you give me so much money, I will pay you, or I will give you this contract that guarantees you heaven. Or if you had a child die, or you could buy the contract for your child and guarantee your child heaven. And they would start selling these things. The results of them selling this, it started with this monk that was like, something ain't right here. We need to look at something and do something different. That monk's name was Martin Luther, born about 100 years after the bubonic plague. Still during that 200 period of recovery, Martin Luther was born. Martin Luther started the Reformation, which started basically the Protestant movement. And how many people got the picture of what salvation was about? So you look at all these things that was going on. And all this bad stuff. And it's like, okay, Mike, you're being a real bummer today. I mean, come on, Mike. I mean, what are you trying to do, depress us all? Sorry. That isn't the intent. I just want to start off with that because that is where so many people are today. They are wrapped up in all the negative, bad stuff going on. There's always been negative, bad stuff going on. Marv Cole. Now, some of you know who Marv Cole is. He basically was working in the prisons in Yakima. He would come over here and speak at our church once in a while. He was a missionary that we were supporting as he was doing mission work in the prison or county jail in Yakima. And the first time I heard Marv Cole talk, he talked about the verse in Matthew where it talks about being a light on a hill. And his whole thing was, if you take a match in this room right now and light a match, how much of a difference is it going to make as far as the light in this room? Not much. When things are going well, when things are light and bright and easygoing, it's like, it's hard to make a big impact. First of all, let me go ahead and read what it says about that. You are the light of the world. A city that is on a hill cannot be hidden, nor do they light a lamp and put it under a basket, but on a lampstand that gives light to all who is in the house. Let your light so shine before men that they may see your good works and glorify your Father in heaven. And that was what he talked about that day, about the fact that when it gets dark, when things aren't going well, when things in the world look like it's the darkest, and for us, it's a dark time right now maybe, but that is our opportunity to shine. And I've never forgot that sermon by Marv, because it really is so true. And then a couple weeks ago, Don Hutchins in his Sunday school class was talking about He was on vacation with his wife, and they had gone down, and I think it was somewhere in around Grand Canyon, and they'd gone to these caves, and they'd gone to this one cave, and they turned out all the lights. And it's so dark. I mean, you couldn't see this here in front of your own face. There's absolutely no light. And the guy lit a single match and lit up the entire cavern with one match. People, when it's dark, that is our opportunity to shine. This is an opportunity for us. This is not just a time to be scared, a time to kind of pull back. This is truly an opportunity for us. So the idea isn't to just be afraid. But I want to go and I want to talk about another time. Can you imagine the apostles? They're following Jesus. They basically left what they knew. Their fishing boats, their lives, Matthew and his tax collecting business. I mean, they've left their lives and they're following Jesus. And it's like Jesus wants to go back to Jerusalem. Now, at one point, they actually say, you know, if you go back to Jerusalem, they're going to kill you. This is not a good thing. And Thomas, I like Thomas. I mean, some people refer to Thomas as doubting Thomas. I like Thomas because Thomas is the guy that sat there and said, okay, if Jesus wants to go to Jerusalem, let's go with him and die. We'll go with him. We're going to get killed, but, you know, we're going to go with him. That's a lot of faith right there. But they get to Jerusalem, and what happens when they go into Jerusalem? It's like, it's Palm Sunday. It's like the king has arrived. This is great. This is wonderful. The disciples are like, oh, wait, maybe this is it. Maybe this is when everything changes. So they go through the week. And as they go through the week, it gets closer to the end and closer to the end, and it gets towards the end of the week. And they have the Last Supper. And during that Last Supper, John talks about a discussion that Jesus has with his disciples. And I want to read, it's in John 16, starting in chapter 29, some of this discussion that Jesus has with the disciples. His disciples said to him, "See, now you are speaking plainly and using no figure of speech. Now we are sure that you know all things and that have no need that anyone should question you. By this we believe you came from God." Jesus answered them, "Do you now believe? Indeed, the hour is coming, yes, has now come, that you will be scattered, each to his own home, and will leave me alone. And yet I am not alone, because the Father is with me. These things I have spoken to you, that in me you may have peace. In the world you will have tribulation, but be of good cheer, I have overcome the world." He knew what was going to happen. They sit in there, they now know, you're from God, you are him. You're the one we were waiting for. This is awesome, this is all good. And he goes, that's awesome, that's great, you know this stuff. It's true. Guess what? You're going to leave me. And it's like, leave you? We finally got here. We're finally there. And even knowing what they are going to do that very night, they are going to do this. He still encouraged them. When Phil called yesterday and asked me to do this, I went out and took a walk. And as I was walking and praying, the phrase, "I have overcome the world," is the phrase that just kept coming back to my mind and coming back to my mind. And so today, what I'm talking about all came from that one phrase. Overcome the world. All the things that we're afraid of, all the things that are troubling us, all the bad things out there. He has overcome the world. So he goes on, though. It doesn't stop there. And I find that just this whole story is amazing to me, because the disciples, I mean, can you imagine being in that situation? Everything's good, and now everything's going to go bad. Because after this time, they're going to go, immediately after this, they're going to go out to the garden. And they're going to pray. Disciples will go to sleep, and Jesus will pray. And then there's going to be a group of people that show up with clubs and swords to take Jesus. And this is not a small group. It's a big group coming to get Jesus. And they're going to arrest him. And it's like the disciples are like, wait. This was all supposed to go good. And, you know, we always talk about the fact that Peter, you know, denies him three times. But do you realize what Peter did before that? Peter is the guy that took a sword against this big group of people. He takes a sword and he's willing to fight for Jesus. He's willing to die for Jesus because these are professional soldiers coming, and he's going to go against them with a sword to the point that he actually cuts somebody's ear off. Can you imagine the confusion when Jesus says, no, don't? He goes, no, I said I was going to die for you. I'm here. I'm ready to die for you. No, don't. Put the sword away. This is what's supposed to happen. The confusion. We know what was supposed to happen. We get to see the book. I mean, we read the story. We know the end. Peter doesn't have a clue of, wait a second, this isn't how it's supposed to work. So when Peter's denying him, you got to remember, Jesus already told him, you guys are going to leave me. It's okay. What he says is, I'm telling you this that you might have peace because I overcome the world. It's already a done deal. But he goes on later and he says this. And this is a prayer that actually Jesus is praying for the disciples. I have manifested your name to the men. Now, he's talking to God, right? Because he's praying. I have manifested your name to the men whom you have given me out of the world. They were yours. You gave them to me. And they have been kept by your word. Now they have known that all things which you have given me are from you. For I have given to them the words which you have given me. And they have received them and have known surely that I have come from you. And they have believed that you sent me. I pray for them. I do not pray for the world, but for those whom you gave me. For they are yours. And all mine are yours, and yours are mine, and I am glorified in them. Now I am no longer in the world, but these are in the world, and I came to you. O Holy Father, keep through your name those whom you have given me, that they may be one as we are. While I was with them in the world, I kept them in your name. Those whom you gave me, I have kept. None of them is lost except for one, the son of perdition, that the scriptures might be fulfilled. But now I come to you, and these things I speak in the world, that they may have my joy fulfilled in themselves. I have given them your word, and the world has hated them because they are not of the world, just as I am not of the world. I do not pray that you should take them out of the world, but that you should keep them from the evil one. They are not of this world, just as I am not of this world. Sanctify them by your truth. Your word is truth. As you sent me into the world, I also send them into the world. And for their sake, I sanctify myself, that they also may be sanctified by the truth. And I threw in the last verse here. I do not pray just for those alone, but for those who will believe in me through their words. That's us. That's who he's praying for. And he's not praying that we are saved from this world or that we're taken out of this world. We are to be here. He knows all the bad things are going to happen, just like at the beginning of this. He knew that there was going to be some bad things happen and they were going to run. He knew that they were going to fall and fail. Guess what? He knows we're going to fall and fail. Doesn't make any difference. We're his. He wants us to have that peace. He wants us to have that assurance. Even though he knows that it's going to be hard. He knows the tribulation is going to be there. He knows this life is not going to be easy for us. He knows that he is with us and he has a purpose for us. And that is why we are here. About 2 years ago, I spoke here, and one of the thing that I talked about was loving God. And all this comes back to loving God. He loved them so much that he assured them, even though he knew that they were going to leave him. He loves us that much. Because he loves us, we should be loving him. The verse, love the Lord your God with all your heart, all your soul, all your mind, and all your strength. If we were to do that, all this stuff that we worry about, all this stuff that gets cluttered up with us, it's like it loses its importance. It loses its effect. Why? Because there's something greater than all those problems out there. It's Jesus Christ. It's his plan. It's a future with him. He knows that all that stuff isn't going to go away. It's going to stay. He knows that we are going to make mistakes, and he knows we're going to stumble. But he loves us enough to assure us that he's still there for us. Just a couple verses to end with. In 2 Timothy 1:7, it says, for God has not given us a spirit of fear, but of power and love and a sound mind. We're not supposed to have the spirit of fear. Psalms 56, 3 and 4. Whenever I'm afraid, I will trust in you, in God. I will praise his word. In God, I have put my trust. I will not fear. What can flesh do to me? In Psalms 46, 1, God is our refuge and our strength, a very present help in trouble. Therefore, I will not fear. Is that where we are? That's where we need to be. So as we go back out in the world and we hear the news and we see all the bad stuff, the trick is take our focus off that, put it back on Christ. He's got a plan. He's in control. And that's the cool thing, is God is in control of it all. He hasn't lost control. The bad times that we're having in the world right now, it's happened before. More than likely, it's going to happen again. Right now, it's what are we doing and where's our focus? Lord, we thank you for this time.